Also, welcome our sister, a new PC on small business development. They decided to join us today just to have a feel of how we run the community. But it's to have an understanding of how is the department actually structured this year after new development within the cabinet, the fifth cabinet. We are a portfolio on economic development. This is our second term. This committee came about. In my acknowledgement, actually, I forgot to acknowledge as I was saying, this committee was born after the president structured the cabinet last year, that is in 2009. We saw the coming in of the Economic Development Department, led by Minister Ibrahim Patel. Thereafter, the Economic Development Portfolio Committee was established in 2009, May. And the mandate will further be explained by the Minister, actually, when he takes us through his presentation on the origin of this department and why is this department in existence today, how does it function thus far, where is it heading to, is there given a new mandate or is it just a continuation of the previous mandate. We're going to hear that from the minister. If there are any shifts, for instance, that would assist in facilitating the handling of the small business and development of the ministry. And of course, I should also help my colleague here, the chairperson of the small business and development GC, to understand and hear that from both people. And also would help the GC on communication. But I'm sure that myself and Mr. Port Mare, quite a leader of the work of this department. Otherwise, I know for the fact that the rest of the members of the Portfolio Commission for Development are new and are going to ensure that they listen before they can ask further questions. Because you need to listen, understand, process, and then ask. Otherwise, you make a mistake of jumping, you know. Certainly, they don't understand the situation. So, that process of learning is quite important. By so saying, I'm not saying you shouldn't ask questions. This is an opportunity today for the minister to visit us, and we're going to give him ample time to do so, and we're going to give members ample time to ask questions. I'm sure that you won't end up talking too much afterwards. I'm literally in this opening and welcoming time to do so. I'm told that within the our group we also have different organizations or business organizations that are here. And this has not been brought to me, but I know there are people in the tobacco industry. We have the media. The civil society is members here. I think those are the people that have brought me attention. If there's anyone I haven't acknowledged, please can relate to them. It's very important for the community to know who you are so that we can also record. Anybody who thinks he or she is acknowledgement, what is your reason? Yes.
Chairperson is getting things from the competition tribunal.
Oh, yes. How did I forget you? Sorry. Yes.
An ethical policy bill for the chairperson and the CEO, they are on their way. They're just learning for you.
Yeah, we're expecting them this afternoon anyway.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, any other? Another stakeholder before I close you. Okay, I take it that everyone is here has been acknowledged, and I'll then go to, as I've indicated, you're all welcome, and I hope that in this second meeting of our history, we'll be able then to learn as much as we are all prepared to learn for better interaction afterwards. Do we have any questions? Yes, we have to, I agree, we have to, from time to time, get together. May we then move on to the next item, which is going to be presented by Jonathan. Jonathan, may I hand over to you? I forgot to mention that the chair of the Small Business Development is the member of the I think you all know the people of the community, who is Ms. Brede. It's important that you know. Thank you very much. Yes, Ms. Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And may I start with a very warm good morning to all members of the committee, as well as the members of the Small Business Portfolio Committee. Today is the start of an important journey in the Trump administration for economic development, because it's the first meeting of the Portfolio Committee at which we will deal with the programmatic and budget issues. And today, of course, by looking at the annual performance plan, I'd like to start, Chair, by saying that I thought we had achieved an enormously positive spirit in the Portfolio Committee in the Ford administration. There was a real sense of working together. And this time we start with a department that is now established. We started last time. I recall the first meeting of the Portfolio Committee, at which I think the department consisted of myself, the deputy minister, I had a PA, she had the team, she had been the speaker of parliament, so she brought her team with her, and I think I had an advisor. with the entirety of the department at the first meeting of that portfolio committee. And so that journey of that first phase of the journey, 5 years of really working through establishing the department, which I will comment on in a moment, has brought us now to a new administration and the second phase or the second period of work of the administration. I look forward to the same spirit of cooperation that marked so much of the work of the committee, and there was a genuine cross-party consensus on any of the key issues that we needed to do. So I welcome the chairperson from MITCU to the new members of Parliament. Congratulations to you on your reappointment as chairperson of the Economic Development Portfolio Committee, and certainly from outside, a strong offer of partnership, cooperation with the portfolio committee, who plays a fundamental role in oversight of the work of the executive. Chairperson, before starting with the detail of the presentation, I also want to indicate that this is the first meeting of the portfolio committee that Deputy Minister is attending. Deputy Minister Masuku has had enormous experience in government as well as in the executive, and he comes to the portfolio with the rich experience that he can draw on. I also have the Director General of the department, Jenny Schreiner, who is well known to many in the House. She has been a member of Parliament previously and took the different jump into the administration. We are accompanied by a team of senior officials. I want to just briefly introduce them. I'm sure the committee will get to know them and many of the other team members very well in the course of the work of the committee. That we have from the ministry side, Niva Mahetla, Sipokazi Shoba, Sulu Mushi, as people who provide advice and support and the administrative backing for the ministry. From the department itself, we've got the CFO, Sintesi Wisterek, who looks after the money, Mohammed Valder, who is responsible for our work in the interface with the development finance institutions and the agencies, Lynette Mills, who heads the PICC technical unit, and she's accompanied by Mulele Pule, who's the chief director. Ms. Nsele, who does work in the department at chief director level in social dialogue. And Haley Hodkin, who provides services to the office of the DJ coordinator. There are also other officials who support the work of the chief directors and leadership of the department. Given them the opportunity to talk to the portfolio committee and table a presentation on the annual performance plan is a useful icebreaker, an opportunity to situate the work of the committee and the department in a particular context. And so I'm going to, in particular, welcome the opportunity and use it not only to put in slide form the annual performance plan that was tabled on Friday in Parliament, but perhaps to set a background to the work of the department and talk a little bit more about the mandate, rationale, what it is the economic development does. And I start with observation that the department itself was established in July 2009, following the appointment of a minister, deputy minister, in the full administration. The core mandate, using today's language, would be to identify priorities for job creation. So jobs is a central preoccupation of the department, of inclusive growth. Yes, the rate of economic growth, but also whether that growth draws in large numbers of South Africans as entrepreneurs, as workers, as investors, and industrialization to ensure that we break with a structural pattern in which we were simply an exporter of raw materials to the rest of the world, but not enough local value add to our enormous natural resources. Our core mandate includes supporting alignment of state around implementation, and here comes the key issue for the existence of the department like that. We have many economic functions, but the economy is a complex organism, and the value of coordination is perhaps ineffective in the sphere of the economy. It's not whether you've got your fiscal policies right on their own, or whether industrial policies work, or whether you have an infrastructure program, but it's also how these connect with each other. Our job is to oversee and provide strategic direction to the development finance institutions, particularly the country's largest one, the IDC, and to provide strategic direction on competition and trade policies, as well as support for the regulatory work of government. So, by way of illustrating this, I thought I should take the committee through just a brief evolution of the department over a period. Phase one of the departments was the establishment of a ministry for policy integration work. That was done in May 2009 when the ministry was established with the announcement of a new cabinet. But virtually within weeks of the establishment of the ministry, SSA data showed the country had officially gone into recession. And listen, I wonder if there's a technical person who can ensure that you've got the screen working. I'll continue in the meantime. I'm sorry that it's as abrupted, but there is a hard copy that has been distributed. And on the hard copy, I'm on page 3 of the hard copy. So, immediately after the convening of the first cabinet, SSA data showed the country had officially gone into recession. And one of our first responsibilities, therefore, was to address the impact of the recession on jobs, on development, and on our people as a whole. And it started in 2009, and most of that work was completed by about 2011. At the same time, we also established functioning departments, because the organogram of the department sorted out, as well as the appointment of the first director general in 2010. So the start of the first financial year of the department. And that I call phase 3. Phase 4 was the transfer of 6 public entities to EDD to provide oversight to those entities. They included regulatory bodies such as the Competition Commission and ITAC, as well as development finance institutions like the IEC, and at the time, COOLA and some of them. The next phase of the work of the department, phase 5, was to complete the development of an economic strategy to deal with the structural challenges in the economy. And that became known as the new growth path, and it set out a number of job drivers. And we developed capacity in the department to monitor key economic trends. And that was from 2009 to 2010 that the bulk of that work was done. Phase 6 was, okay, we've got the plans, we've had the immediate short-term intervention to deal with the economic crisis. How do we now begin to shift the economy towards a higher and more inclusive growth trajectory, given the challenges that we inherited? And that was beginning to start out the implementation of Outcome 4. Until October 2010, the economy was continuing to lose jobs. So our first part of our work was to have a jobs turnaround strategy, begin to grow jobs in the economy again, recover the jobs that were lost, and then have net new growth. Phase 7 was to take the work of the IEDC as well as the regulators and focus the attention much more on the impact on jobs. Competition authorities have both a direct and indirect impact on jobs directly through the public interest conditions that the Competition Act allow, in fact, enjoin them to impose where so required. ITAC, obviously, in the job impact of the policies around both placing protection and lifting protection on industrial products. And the Competition and Trade institutions, through their overall contribution to creating a dynamic and productive economy. Phase 8 of our work was to take what we did beyond the state, to begin to engage the business community and organized labor on partnerships. And we identified some areas in the new growth path, and I'll talk to that in a little while, where we concluded social accords. Phase 9 was to consolidate the work of the funding agencies and much more aggressively roll them out in roadshows to take the story of the IDC and its various subsidiaries like the small enterprise finance agencies to communities. Phase 10 was launching the infrastructure plan and supporting the work of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. Now, this is a quick take on the various overlapping phases of work of the department as it coupled with the shock of a global economic crisis that was the deepest crisis in the global economy since the 1930s, and at the same time try to deal with South Africa's own structural challenges of shifting the economy to be more inclusive and more developmental in its outcomes. Economic coordination is one of the themes that I spoke about. And EDD, the Economic Development Department, which is its official name, provides or forms part of a number of secretaries. It coordinates the work of different parts of government. They include principally the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, which operated by decision of cabinet until recently when Parliament passed the Infrastructure Development Act earlier this year, which now gives it a statutory form. The Economic Development MINDEC, which brings together MECs together with members of the National Executive to work together on economic development. The Outcome 4, which is the outcome dealing with jobs and inclusive growth, the departments that work together to achieve those outcomes. And the EDD is also an active member of the Economic Sector Infrastructure Development Cluster. So those are the fora through which coordination, alignment takes place. Let me take this conceptual slide and illustrate it with a practical example. So take infrastructure by way of illustration. What is the kind of work that EDD does on infrastructure? The first thing is we convene meetings of the TICC. So we would provide all the work that goes into the meetings of council, the management committee, the secretaries, as well as the sub-coordinators. And yeah, I'm not talking of issuing a notice and taking minutes. It's really thinking through the issues that a particular meeting must deal with and working within government to collect the information, provide the policy options, give the background, and set out potential points for decision. Let me illustrate it with an example. We look at the BOLD program and try to find how can we speed it up and make it more cost effective and increase the number of jobs locally. And one of the many ideas that emerged from that review was the use of innovative building technologies, relying not only on brick and mortar, but taking the international experience ranging from the United States and Brazil to China and Germany. when new building technologies have brought down the cost of providing clinics and schools, and has also been capable of developing a local manufacturing sector that produces these new building materials. So that's the opportunity. The EDU would then work with, say, the CSIR to pull together the technical specifications, do a review of how many companies are currently manufacturing these technologies, to look at the international experience, what works, what doesn't work, to look at the South African climatic and geological conditions and see what is appropriate to our circumstances, and then put all of that together in a presentation that goes eventually to the TACCC Council. So that would be one of a number of work streams that go to a council, and it would then be discussed there. And in this example that I've given, we had the nine seniors there, the heads of local government, and that proposal was accepted, and it allows us now to go into implementation mode on the use of new building technologies. The second bullet is a collection of information on 18 SIPs. Now, the SIP is one that you'll frequently use. It's an acronym that stands for Strategic Integrated Project. There are 18 such SIPs in the National Infrastructure Plan. A SIP is not an individual construction site. It's a number of different construction sites that together forms an intervention. I know that today's presentation, Chairperson, is not principally about the infrastructure plan, but just to illustrate, if you take one of the SIPs, SIP 1, it's unlocking the economic opportunity of the modern mineral belt. So that SIP looks at the opportunity to mine coal and chromium, palladium, platinum, and other minerals in the Waterberg area, as well as in the area near to Sekukuni. To unlock that, we need rail lines, roads. In the case of the Waterberg, water. We need urban development that is more thoughtfully planned, so that as we expand mining there, we also have integrated cities and proper housing for miners, as well as the surrounding commercial and industrial activities for workers and communities that grow around that. We need greening. How do we use modern technologies to green a city that can arise there? We need ICT networks. Power supply. We've got an opportunity to industrialize. But as we unlock that in the Limpopo area, in the neighboring province of Mpumalanga, we also see opportunities to use coal from Limpopo and rail it to Mpumalanga. So as the coal deposits in Mpumalanga get depleted, we put in place the infrastructure belt that allows those coal-fired power stations to extend their working life. As we work in Mpumalanga, we also see an opportunity to address the challenge of large numbers of people commuting daily between Mpumalanga by road, by bus, in often quite unsafe conditions, to Gauteng, to a better, more coordinated and safer public transport system. I've just covered a few. I've not even looked at the social infrastructure of clinics and schools. So bringing all of that together constitutes the plan for Strategic Integrated Project 1. And that's how we're organizing the infrastructure program, connecting all of these things. So what we now do is every quarter we monitor the actual construction on every project in a SIP. So SIP 1 would easily have something like 20 projects. Some of them would be very large projects, like the Kusile Power Station, maybe in one of those. But they would also have smaller projects, like the building of health facilities or clinics in Nepalali. And we've developed a dashboard that goes straight to Cabinet, and which provides Cabinet with a bird's-eye view of what is happening on infrastructure. That information also contains in for a hard data for cabinet spending level. So what percentage of construction has been done, what are we spending, how many jobs have been created, and where are the problems. A third kind of work is coordinating information for skills plans for every step. So we've taken step one, and we've with an example, and we've looked between now and 2030. What are the numbers of engineers that you need, and break them down into your civil, mechanical, industrial, the different types of skills that you need, what technicians do you need for the build program, your welders, your bricklayers, your riggers, all the artisanal requirements. And use that, aggregate it obviously with all the SIPs, and use it as a national infrastructure skills plan that universities can begin to plan on what is the output that they need to be able to provide a society to sustain beyond the next 3 or 4 years the old program. The next bullet point is we then work with the IDC on the localization plan. So, okay, right, we're still on step one. We are now building a Medupi power station. If we build future power stations beyond Medupi, what are the lessons from here for localization? The turbines, the boilers, what can be localized? How can you create jobs in the long run by creating industrial capacity in South Africa? And the IDC leads that work. The first bullet I covered, which is the use of innovative building technologies. The sixth one is to collect data on spending by public agencies. So we look at every province and we see how much do they spend, who are the good performers, who are not, and we provide that information to cabinet. We look at ESCOM and Transnet and the other public agencies, the national departments, and we look at every major city and every district municipality. This is the infrastructure spend. And we use real-time information so that it's not a year and a half old, it's as close to contemporary spend as we possibly can get. And we empower our cabinet to be able to require interventions where there is underspending. We identify blockages in implementation. Let's say there's a big project that needs a water license and there's a delay in issuing the water license. We'll find out from the relevant department what the delay is, and we'll work with the department to overcome the delay. Or if there's an environmental impact assessment that needs to be completed, and there's some information missing, or there's public representation with concerns, we try to see how we can unlock and unblock that. We wanted to work to deepen the 20-year project pipeline. The infrastructure is one of those areas where in the past, we had a soft start approach. Each new administration tries to develop a new infrastructure plan. We now have a smoother plan over the next 20. In fact, it's now stretches into a 50-year period. Looking at what are the country's transport, energy, ICT, health, education, water, sanitation infrastructure requirements will be. It allows each administration to confirm and modify where necessary. But it allows us also to have long-term planning because infrastructure doesn't fit into a five-year envelope. If you build a power station, typically it takes from 10 to 15 years between conception and execution, and that is if everything runs fairly smoothly. So you need to have longer-term planning horizon if you want to pull off infrastructure successfully. And indeed, some of our current problems is because we didn't have a long planning horizon in the past. Next, we put all of this together into timelines and feasibility processes so that you don't only have your project plan, but you also now begin to say, how do you get funding 8, 9, 10 years from now when the funding levels go beyond what we projected on the budget? So that's the kind of work, that EDD does through the TACCC technical unit. That is one example of the wider instance that I gave on the previous slide where I said the kind of work that we do that illustrates it for infrastructure. The next area of work that we do is we seek to reach agreements with the business community and organized labor dealing with common commitments. So we've taken from the neurological part, skill development. Absolutely critical. And we forged our partnership with the trade union movement, the business community, FET colleges and universities, to work on an immediate program to increase artisanal skills, engineering skills, and improve operator skills. We've got basic education accord in which we encourage companies to adopt schools, unions to adopt schools, and help them to improve their capacity and their governance structure. We get public officials to adopt schools. Basically, rural schools often have very little parent base that they can draw on in terms of skills and resources, and we try to see can we bring more skills and resources in. We have a local procurement accord. The National Fields Accord, by the way, worked very closely with the Department of Higher Education and Training on its implementation. One of the hallmarks of EDD is much of its work gets done by forming partnerships. The Basic Education Accord is done with the Department of Basic Education. We have a local procurement accord that has a number of departments that are working with us, including the Department of Trade and Industry, as well as departments like BAF on agriculture, forestry, and fishing. We have an accord on the green economy with common commitments of how we can ensure that our climate change commitments actually lead to green jobs and green industrialization. We have a youth employment accord, which was signed in April last year, and which sets goals and targets and commitments of what we will do to promote youth employment. So as an example, one of the commitments in the youth accord is to promote entrepreneurship among young people, to harness their energy, to set up new businesses. But then one of the big constraints is industrial funding. So working with the IDC and its subsidiaries, we were able to allocate a sum of 2.7 billion rand over the next 5 years that will be available for youth entrepreneurship as industrial funding, not grants, but industrial funding. And so what we then do is we then go to the NYDA, which has also previously given industrial funding. We said to them, why didn't you rationalize your responsibilities? Instead of you giving industrial funding, why didn't you work with young people to get their business plans in a form that can be adopted? And we will provide a deeper source of funding. We've also concluded a social accord in October 2012 during that 2012 Platinum strike that helped resolve the strike at the time. So that's another area of work that the department does, which is to identify areas where we can begin to build more social consensus and then have commitments that businesses, government, trade unions and community organizations must deliver. I spoke about the job drivers of the new growth path. They are infrastructure, manufacturing, minerals and beneficiation, the agriculture value chain, that's from farming right through to agro-processing, tourism and high-level business process services, the green economy, the knowledge-based sector for the economy, the social economy, which are co-ops and non-profit organizations, public services, and African regional development. That slide is not in the handout. We put it in because there are a number of new members of the committee, but we will, in future presentations to the committee, go through the job drivers in more detail. The economic planning system that we use in government is directed to achieve the vision of the National Development Plan. And the main operationalizing of the NDP takes in the economy takes place through the new growth path, the national infrastructure plan that I spoke of, and the industrial quality action plan. Now, in this administration, what cabinet has begun to do is to take the electoral commitments that the ruling party has made, as well as the national development plan, and put it into a governance program, which is the medium-term strategic framework that sets for the administration how we will achieve the goals that we've set ourselves. Outcome 4 of the medium-term strategic framework, and outcome 6 are particularly relevant to EED's work, but indeed there are other outcomes that are important. Outcome 4, by the way, deals with inclusive growth and jobs, and outcome 6 deals with economic infrastructure. And of course, the outcome dealing with skills development, the one dealing with rural development, some of the other ones are all very relevant to the work. The MTSF allocates responsibilities to the Economic Development Department for a number of tasks, and that helped to shape our 2014-15 annual performance plan. The APP, as honourable members will know, is the implementation plan to give effect at the departmental level to government's overall medium-term strategic framework. It sets annual targets, and they intended to enhance implementation and accountability, and also to hold the department accountable. Of course, we make the point that an economic environment changes regularly. So you have your overall plan, but you've got to have the flexibility to adjust to new requirements in the course of a given year. The ACP reflects the revised MTSF. It's an effective plan for the next 9 months, and it, the strategic plan itself of the department, like every other department, will now be more fully amended to reflect the medium-term strategic framework of government, and all departments are planning to table that early in the next calendar year. The legal mandates of EDD, the most recent of the legal mandates, is the Infrastructure Development Act, which Parliament has just passed. It requires EDD effectively to provide technical support to the PICC, that is information that helps the structure to coordinate the nation's infrastructure program. But it also empowers EDD, or the Ministry of Economic Development, working with the PICC and partner ministers to set guidelines, targets, and regulations on key issues for infrastructure, particularly to mandate developmental outcomes of infrastructure. For example, we would be able to publish regulations on local procurement, or the employment of youth and women, or on skills development. The legal mandate also extend the implementation of the Industrial Development Corporation Act, the Competition Act as amended, and the International Trade Administration Act. The organizational structure of the department is it has four, what we may call core business components. That's economic policy development, economic planning and coordination, social dialogue, and the PICC technical unit. So, for the rest of the presentation, I will speak quite extensively on key performance indicators, KPIs. And they require quite strong collaboration across the different programs of EDD. The budget, EDD receives about 697 million rand a year from Parliament. Of that, 534 million is transferred to agencies, and the department's operations is funded by spending envelope of about 163 million rand. It makes it one of the smaller departments in government measured by budget, but because of the other tools in the toolkit, the key measure of the department's work is not so much just the budget, but also how it coordinates the work of agencies and the work that it does in the PICC. The split of the 163 million is set out on the slide, and honourable members will see the sum that goes to administration, policy development, planning and coordination, and social dialogue and socio-economic development. The first strategic objective of the 6 that we've set is to ensure a well-managed department that provides services to the ministry and all the staff in carrying out all the core business of the department. strategic objective one, therefore don't have a standalone KPI, but it really helps us to achieve all the other KPIs. There is a requirement, there's a clear and explicit reporting requirement in the regulatory framework for all the areas of funding, stocking, and so on. As part of the new strategic objectives of EDD, we'll be reviewing the organizational structure of the department, the budget program and structures, and the strategic plan of the department. And this work is far advanced and will be concluded and announced in the new strategic plan that must be tabled in the new calendar year. Let me go into the strategic objectives of the core work of the department. Strategic objective number two is to coordinate the job drivers, and I referred earlier to the job drivers, and to work on sector and special projects to give effect to those job drivers, to implement the new growth path, to ensure in the process job creation, inclusive growth, industrialization, and social inclusion. So what we've done, out of the job drivers of the new growth path, the one that has been implemented to the greatest extent is infrastructure. So we've learned from the work of the PICC that we need quality information provided timely, and we now need to develop similar systems for the other job drivers and for the economy as a whole. So we've come up with four key performance indicators that I've mandated the department to focus on. The first is to coordinate and support implementation of at least two of the other job drivers to developing information and monitoring dashboards for those job drivers, collecting the data on their performance, aligning activities with the overall government plan, and unblocking obstacles to implementation. So to take considerable experience on infrastructure, beginning to bed that down into more of the job drivers. The second KPI is to participate in the cluster outcome four processes within government in order to achieve the economic outcomes. And that means we produce four quarterly progress reports on outcome four that is cross-cutting. They don't cover the work just of the department. It covers the work of all the economic departments. And that information then goes to cabinet. We will do two in-depth reviews of progress, opportunities, and risks for cabinet members. So we take a big challenge in this area, do a body of work, and then produce that for cabinet to make the necessary decisions. The third KPI is to strengthen implementation of the NGP as part of achieving the National Development Plan goals. And there we have four initiatives underway. The fourth and final KPI for this strategic objective is to complete spatial, local, and provincial initiatives. Now, these would be a range of measures. They would include greater oversight of provincial economic development functions, particularly the production of viable annual performance plans by provinces. But there would also be spatial plans in a city or in a village that helps to unlock economic opportunity there. So that then is strategic objective two. Objective three is to coordinate infrastructure development. And I have covered with the earlier slide a number of examples, but this slide just gives a heads up on some of the key work we've done, how to address water disruptions in specific towns, support for the rollout of the city school board program and the solar water heaters, the skills plan, and helping agencies to improve infrastructure spending. So what do we plan to do for the rest of this year? I task the department to undertake four KPIs. We've numbered them sequentially, so the numbering continues. KPI 5 will be cabinet-level quarterly progress reports on each strategic integrated project, and we target 60 such reports for the year as a whole. KPI 6 is infrastructure projects that are unblocked or fast-tracked or facilitated, and we target 8 for the year. KPI 7 is Cabinet and PICC strategic decisions on infrastructure that is actually implemented. So those may be decisions on policy, on funding, on the users of infrastructure, on development impact, or on capacity development. And we have four such initiatives. And KPI 8 is the secretariat and coordination function provided to the CICC. And we envisage a minimum of 20 such support functions provided to council, the CICC secretariat, the CICC Manco, and the CIPCO members meetings. I move next, Chairperson, to strategic objective 4, which is promoting investment and expanding industrial funding and entrepreneurship, and improving the performance of the development finance institutions. Really, various aspects of funding and investment. And what we envisage here is that we support new investment that diversifies the economy, creates employment, both basically by addressing bottlenecks and through the oversight of agencies like the IBC and FIFA. And we need to ensure that investments do more to support inclusive growth by driving industrialization, one of the key issues in the medium-term strategic framework, creating decent work opportunities and providing empowerment to women, youth, small businesses and the rural people. In each of this, we work with the departments concerned. So there's a department coordinating government's work on women in the presidency. Minister Khadebe, one of his responsibilities, also work on youth. We have a new small business ministry, and we have a rural development ministry. So our work is to work closely with them to ensure that those core development outcomes are achieved in our industrial funding strategy. There are many examples of past achievements that we could talk about, helping an investor to obtain sites, water, electricity, licenses, or facilitating soya crushing in Mpumalanga and elsewhere, or taxi assembly in KZN and Gauteng, or supporting electronic equipment assembly plant in Atlantis, increasing industrial funding through the IDC, consolidating national lending to small businesses, to youth, to the green economy, and improving the management and scale of industrial funding. So it's really a story of industrial funding. So I've tasked the department with 5 KPIs. KPI 9 is to facilitate, fast track, or unblock 10 investment initiatives. Foreign investors or domestic investors want to come to South Africa, want to set up operations, and they find either red tape or there are gaps in our system, and help them to overcome those. KPI 10 is to improve the efficiencies of the development finance institutions and ensure world-class institutions. So I have regular meetings with the DFIs, and we've developed dashboards to ensure regular oversight. So we know what the jobs impact is of the IEC, we know how much it's investing in the green economy, we know what it's doing to empower youth or to empower small business. KPI 11 is to measure and expand the level of industrial funding available across government and by the DFI. Just to say, if we really want to industrialize, part of it requires resources. Where are we spending money? How can we spend better? There's not always more, it's sometimes better, but where are the gaps that we should be spending more? So I know that we will be working very closely with the small business industry to make the argument for more spending on small business as an example. And we'll work closely with the presidency to have more resources for youth entrepreneurship. KPI 12 is to measure and facilitate the improvement of the job impact of industrial funding. So I've spoken in KPI 11 about the rand value of the spending. We've got to lift that. But the other part of it is to ensure that the rand value of spending also lifts the number of jobs. If we go the capital-intensive route and we invest principally in projects that generate growth but with very little jobs impact, then not too many South Africans benefit from it. So it's also working very closely with DFI to lift the employment intensity of the investment that they put in. And there are three issues in that regard. KPI 13 is to measure and facilitate the developmental goals through industrial funding. And that is now beyond jobs. That's quite a key one that's KPI 12. But beyond jobs, we need to ensure that we bring more women into the mainstream economy and young people, small businesses. We've got a program to focus on building a capacity for black industrialists to get into industry, the growth of township enterprises, rural development and entrepreneurship. Now, while I put this as developmental goals, as they are, they're also sources of growth. When you bring more small business into the economy, or more young people, or more women into the economy, you also bring a bigger part of the South African talent pool into the economy. And so you create the conditions in the medium to long term for much better growth. Objective 5 is competition, trade and other economic regulations in support of job creation. Our key work is oversight of regulatory agencies. And in the past year, the gains that the regulatory agencies made included action against the construction cartel, conditions on the takeover of Upgrade by a foreign investor, promulgating amendments to the Competition Act, and trade measures that form part of the revitalization strategy. I know the competition authorities will be addressing the committee later, and I'd like to acknowledge the presence of the newly appointed commissioner of the Competition Commission, and Mr. Bonakele, and the deputy, one of the FUCA members, I should say, of the Competition Tribunal, and I think the chair of the tribunal will be joining the committee shortly. Under this one, and I'll go through it more quickly, Chair, there are 4 KPIs, strengthening the administrative efficiency of our authorities, evaluating and strengthening the job impact of trade and competition authorities, reducing headache and unnecessary restrictions on enterprises, and improving the impact assessment of our regulations. And finally, building regulatory capacity and effectiveness across the state. One of the things that the NPSF asks EDD to do is to ensure that all economic regulators are trained to a required standard across the state so that we have standards of performance that we can rely on. The final strategic objective is number 6, facilitating social dialogue and implementation of the accords, supporting productivity and innovation. And we've done quite a bit of work in this past year on youth employment of courts, and there are 5 KPIs. 1 on support local procurement, at 18, 19 is support in the development of the green economy and green jobs, 20 is skill development, 21 is youth empowerment, and 22 is national sector or workplace economic development partnerships facilitated with social partners. That brings me to the concluding part of the presentation, Chairperson. 5 core mandate strategic objectives, 22 KPIs, and 154 outcomes targets that have been set. What's worth pointing the committee to is there's an increased emphasis on quality information for better coordination. To not just pick the information given by departments and provinces and municipalities, but to put in place quality control, to develop simple, well-targeted dashboards, to unblock or fast-track projects, to build partnerships with stakeholders, and to have plans and policies that lead to better implementation of the existing framework. The next step is, I have said, a challenging program for EDD, but if we achieve it, it will make a real contribution to inclusive growth and job creation. Many of the KPIs are new, reflecting the new MPSF administration, as well as the learning over the past 5 years, and grouped it into these new 5 core strategic objectives. The ACT covers the remaining 9 months of the financial year, and the new strategic plan will be submitted in time for the next financial year. And that, Chairperson, concludes the summary of the more detailed ACT that was tabled in Parliament on Friday. Thank you for this opportunity to address the committee. Back to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. I guess everyone now understands what you you have improved in terms of the APC. You did mention that the transplantation remains the same. The APC is improved. Of course, because it is a different year, financial year, that the cases that is at the end when it's supposed to be deep into the implementation. Because of elections, we have to really adjust and ensure that we continue. But the PNE doesn't clear, it clarifies us as to what is to happen in the whole MSF period and MPF period. So I think what we need to do is just to ensure that we revisit the department's structure. The ADP at table centers in March, we have provided you with that information. This ADP and other documents that have been provided. So that you can be in a position to understand what you want. But I think the minister has tried his level best to summarize and the work that they will be faced with in the parliament, the remainder of the third year of the parliament. So members, you have the third of the department in this. Members of the portfolio committee on tomorrow's business development, you are please to ask questions. You know what I mean? I omitted because I know that we have new members. I'm going to take us on a time to know who's here. As you speak, please mention your name, which has been coming from, so that you can know.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Kovac Mule. Minister, thank you very much for the quite extensive presentation. Obviously, I mean, one of the first things that one would sort of, you know, trying to cut on it is those parts that will be taken away from the department to the Ministry of Small Business. And how and in what, you know, way will it affect, you know, all your, you know, what you have presented to us. So that is very important. The second one is, I think what is very clear from this is that the implementation is not within the EE department, but various other departments and ministries. And then one really asks the question, you know, at the end of this, so what, you know, somewhere this must be implemented and, you know, there must be consequences for non-compliance. So in other words, to prevent it, it is not with a nice document and a court and things like that. What happens if that does not happen? What happens, you know, if they don't comply? So that it's not just a creating a lot of nice reading that sound very nice, but it's actually making a difference. That's the one point. Other thing is also following from that, you've mentioned the medium-term framework that implies budget, which sometimes can be a beautiful thing, but if there are not money, it obviously, you know, totally nullifies maybe a good idea. I remember I once asked Minister Gordhan, who was still Minister of Finance, I said, Minister, beautiful plan that you let the National Health Insurance, how on earth will you generate the money to fund it? And I know that what a challenge, how to fund everything that maybe different departments create. So what are these, the practical, because somewhere along the line, one must say, okay, that's good, it sounds fantastic. How will this actually play out in reality and in terms of compliance and all that? I'm going to stick with those questions, and maybe later this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson, and Comrade Minister, thank you very much for this good afternoon. Actually, congratulations on having, with your department, having covered the size that you have covered in a very short period after the establishment of this department. I want to move from the principle. I believe that one of the challenges that we face as a country is the gap between the rich and the poor. If we don't consciously address that, we run a risk of producing singular millionaires instead of producing many economically empowered people, even if they are less than millionaires. I would think we will have done better if we just do that. And one of the instruments that I think will help us do that is to embrace and actively support cooperatives. So when the minister made the input, I have heard about the SMMEs, but not the way have I heard about cooperatives. And I think that cooperatives should not only fall into the social economy, but they must also be in the real economy. Because just to give the last example, Comrade Chair, taken time, there is nothing wrong with having a cooperative of engineers so that those students that qualify from technicons and universities, they form a cooperative. That way it means we are empowering the disempowered that are fresh from universities. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Patrick Atkins from the Democratic Alliance. Thank you, Minister, for your very sensitive presentation. In your presentation, you made the point, you said that the thing about economics is that things change all the time. And on the board behind you, or next to you there, as far as job drivers are concerned, one of those you've got on there is mining and beneficiation. And I think a great concern for us and for the country at the moment is the fact that the mining industry is changing dramatically around the world. At the moment, you have hundreds of thousands of people employed as miners and in mining itself. And if anything, it is likely to reduce significantly over the next 10 or 15 years because of mechanization of the mining itself. My thought is, what has been done? What has been thought about how we're going to reskill the people that effectively are involved in mining now or might be our future miners? Because the world itself is changing, and obviously we don't want to be in a situation where we swamped by this change, where all of a sudden we have a lot of good people put out of work by the change in nature of the way that mining is done worldwide, and will obviously come to our shores as well. So I think my question there is, what is the department doing about thinking about the future and about how the economy is going to change, and pretty much in line with what you're saying about the fact that the world changes and we need to be ready to plan for that before it hits us. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other
questions?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, for a fantastic presentation of the plan of the department. Some of us are new here, but I think from that simplified the presentation, we're beginning to have an idea as to exactly what the department was doing. I just want to say something on strategic objectives. KPI 1, key performance objectives, strategy. I think this is a very powerful instrument here, Minister. There's been a problem in the past in the sense that quite many have promoted the development of local infrastructure through the production of local goods and services, of course. We have from time to time realized that more of our goods have been coming from outside China, etc. No, that thing should not happen. But I think there should be a balance. Because if we will promote local groups and entities, that in itself empowers a local assembly, it empowers those people who are marginalized people who could not participate in our economy. Now, what is it that will be done differently, the minister this time around, just to ensure that we promote local producers, manufacturers in particular, so that we promote them, the finances, the skills, and so on. But what is it that we can add on what we have for them? Also on the issue of skills development, I think that policy in that respect, but this is the fifth parliament minister, and I think the department has got a big responsibility that as we move toward the second phase of transition from the progress of the past toward ensuring that economic empowerment of the majority really what is it from the perspective of the EG that we can do to ensure that quite a several policies that are aimed at enhancing and empowering our people, we find a system of ensuring that they move faster, that people really get the skills, not just an isolated work of here and there, but that we ensure that more and more of our people are empowered in such a way that they understand what is being provided for them. We definitely to hear from the minister as to whether we'll be able to add some value to what is there or not. That's to make sure that there's progress this time around in the big democratic country.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I don't know the name.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. My name is Toby Trust. From the EA Small Business Development Club. Thank you very much, Minister, for your presentation. This certainly outlines a very ambitious program for a nine-month period. What interests me is how the department and the other ones in the economic cluster are able to really measure the impacts that your policies are having on the real economy. And I'm picking up here what my colleague, Honorable Moreira, was pointing out, which is that many of your KPIs and plans for the department are process-related to internal working with the department. And really what is going to count for the measurement of performance is what are the do to jobs creation, what are the do to economic growth, how is it affecting youth unemployment. You know, these are the real measures of progress within the government. And I'd like to ask the Minister how the introduction of the Small Business Development Department, particularly, obviously you can't answer this directly because you're not the Minister responsible, but in terms of the government's thinking, the cabinet's thinking, what is the way, how is it going to be achieved that the guidelines and the cause that have been set up in the past have more teeth? That if it is decided that small businesses are a priority for the administration, how are the other departments that have restrictive legislation in place going to be persuaded that they need to amend that legislation to the benefit of small business and job creation? Which then presents the issue of an ideological conflict at the core of the administration between those that support the National Democratic, the National Development Plan, and those that do not, and I include in the latter, the trade unions and the South African Communist Party, which you yourself represent in your past role. So these are broad questions, Minister, but I think they're important because they really point to the issue of core economic policy and who within the various economic departments is going to actually pay tighter. Is it the Treasury? Is it your department? Is it the VCI? Is it the Department of Labour? That is a summary of my question. Thank you.
I hope you don't doubt the commitment of the
minister. I certainly don't doubt that.
Thank you. Yes. 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 Yes.
Yes. We may be new here, but we expect that those who are here before us will guide us properly. This is a parliamentary committee. I don't think we want to remove the party policy element into it. That the last honorable member who has just put him up, referring to the alliance and the Communist Party and so on, we don't want to go in that direction. can deal with the issues that are in the center. We should not go into the space.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's why I think I should point to the fact that I hope he doesn't have for Mr. Kennedy referring to the minister having been there as a member of parliament, as a member of the cabinet, as the lead in the committee and the authority in the committee development department. And I think it's only proper and fair to address him and not what, because every day children in the government and whatever the government community, and I'm sure that the government has committed towards the implementation of the MPP.
Minister, thank you very much for your presentation. I'm quite impressed by your...
Hello, who's speaking? And from what?
My name is Kumbati. I would not say what I represent. I just want to mention that I don't mean what's well.
Okay, let me do you a favor then. That's the intention from EFF.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm quite impressed, Minister, with your new economic growth and the coordination and support that your program together with your counterparts and other various departments and finance teams are doing. However, I would like to be aware that is this going to be the same when you go and support the community that are depressed and economically marginalized? You will remember the program of both the third parliament or the third administration and fourth administration that of consistently trying to support what it used to be called the presidential law or the presidential law at point. So the program aim is simply seeking the communities that we can't begin economically depressed and isolated socially. By both the plans of local, provincial, and national government, and they ended up moving down the ladder in terms of what they were before and what they were consistently becoming. To me, that is very important because what is socially troubling our communities currently is the amount of money they spend on transportation, moving from their communities to the places of work. I am impressed by your zone, but I think strategically you are still entering the context of the economic migration. Because, for instance, if you say to me, here is an Indian company locating itself in Richard Bay, and you say to me, the Richard Bay nearest community supposed to be the key of the employment opportunity or supposed to be benefiting communities into that. Richard Bay and Mbali and Zalene might look a little bit closer, but there are other communities who are further down the line from your target economic zone. My point here is when you advise those new investors in South Africa as to where they will be located and supported in your new economy zone, please remember that you have what you call the presidential local program, which for 10 years identified the crisis.
Can you wrap up on that?
In my closing, I would like to say that let that be a discussion between yourself and the province and the residents in terms of what continues to be the support in those communities. But I feel that there is a consistent disconnect from what we are doing now
from what was proposed before. Those communities still have expectations in terms of what national government was supposed to have attracted as a new economic generation and a city into those communities. And I think that this is picking up in all the programs of government. Thank you, Chair.
The 23 focal areas, I think that the new summit is also going on, that is just to the not just the ministers, the local development ministers. We have a great support, the plan that is here. I think the former person of transport might be also in a position to educate on that. These are plans of government.
Presentation. Very articulate, focused on specific, clear. I would want to share some information related to some of the issues, particularly by the aspect of. I was part of the debate of the and I was talking about infrastructure development. And in that speech, I actually zoomed on the 23 goals which are poverty and priority and level of development. What the minister has presented here is the overall and the program that is going to be implemented in this financial way. But again, in understanding the plan of the government, take into consideration that we have the NDP, we have the Nation Park, and we have key areas of focus that have been presented through the zona, and also the real program that's going to be implemented by other departments. And what the Honorable Member Bata is bringing is more on the rural development and infrastructure development that is aimed at developing underdeveloped areas to attract investment and also to support agriculture and rural development programs. And even the Department of Transport, that's our chairperson of the Port of Law Committee, has got a detailed plan. The Honorable Member, if they wanted to get certain information, would encourage me to also attend the meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, because that's where the detail will be. And the Portfolio Committee on Local Development, because that is where the detail will be. This department, that is only, that is not going to be presenting the work that is being done by other departments in this particular committee. And I'm sure that all from the cross-partisan members deploy the different committees for that group, that understanding, and then we discuss that in their focus. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. President.
I think belonging to this department, they do have to understand what's happening in other areas. Because this, like the work of the department, mandate of the department, suggest that it is a policy and see the department has ensured that it's unblocked all the blockages that hinder development, whether it's around infrastructure, whether it's around manufacturing, whether it's around mining, all the trends, all drivers that are there to ensure that it does that. As you can see and hear from what the minister presented, the main focus in the past term, which is the fourth parliament, was on infrastructure and the nation that in this new term is going to be focusing on other job drivers. And did mention that there are primary ones to be around the manufacturing and localization, primary mining and manufacturing. please let's go and retread the MGT. It tells exactly what's going to be happening. Maybe just to as a reminder before you come in. NGP says between 2010 and 2020 we'll be creating about 15,000. How many jobs? Quite a million jobs. And between 20 NGP says the question increase by 2010. It means therefore that we're going to be happy to read and see the difference between what will be created, what the NGP says, and what the NGP says, which is the country's plan up to 2030. To me, if we do so, we'll be able to understand what this implementation plan says against the overall plan. The IPAD says something, and it continuously gives us the areas of focus. So as it gives us the areas of focus, we come in after to refocus on that area. And I think that is very, very important. Because if we say we're going to focus in agriculture and agro-processing and the value chain, the entire value chain, it's for us to then use our mind towards that, you know, focus our mind towards that, so that we can be able to ask questions relevant to that. And in that way, we will be helping the minister to refocus, if he hasn't been focusing on that, refocus probably on what we think the country needs to do. So, colleagues, by this, just saying to all of us, as we come here, we must make the most of the time provided. By really asking questions that are relevant to the presentation that is there, and are focused. I'm not saying you've been asking questions that are not relevant. The reason why I gave most of you more time because I realized that you were really asking major questions in the committee, and which is very good. We really appreciate that. Minister, maybe you can come in.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the honourable members for their comments and for their questions. Let me start with Honourable Murray's questions, and first thank you for the kind comment about the presentation. I think I'd like to take Honourable Murray on a different journey, a journey that doesn't start with budgets, but starts with effective implementation. Because it is not the case that our only concern, our only challenge is more money. And therefore, the underlying concept of the goal area that we put in, that we've got to say, where is the budget for this? This is the point that we in fact have a considerable sum of money that is allocated through the public finance management system. Our job is to ensure better delivery to that money. And let me give you an example. 5 years ago, to the day, every single taxi in South Africa was imported. We were making, manufacturing, assembling, not a single taxi here. So what is it that EDD, what is the value add of the department? Because you go to, what's the consequence of non-delivery? We identified the challenge, sat down with EODA South Africa, worked out with him what would it require to manufacture a taxi locally. So Johan can have some ideas of what he thinks we would need to do to get economics right. We then sat down with IDC and said, in your existing envelope, what can you do? We went to the DTI, we said, without increasing the envelope of resources, what can you do? We sat down with the National Department of Transport and we said, where is our taxi recapitalization program getting? So if we looked at how everybody was doing their silo area, the area that they were focusing on, and we started to create a cost-cutting opportunity. Where are we today? Today we're at the point where we now have two assembly plants for local taxis. One is at the Queen by Toyota, and the other one in Springs by Beijing Autoworks. Now, what was critical there? It wasn't resistance. We didn't need to have condemnation and consequences we don't do. There was a good will in all of the departments to get the work done. But we just needed to get a frame where we were thinking in this more lateral way. Not just what each department does, but the opportunities we can unlock. That's what, for me, is the critical driver around this implementation. We will not be doing our job if our principal thing was to say we want the possible money for all these things. It's about unlocking the value where there is money, but it's not necessarily having the desired economic development, employment, transformation, impact that it's needed. That for me is the key, and I think in the dialogue between the department and the portfolio committee, we'll consistently make this point. It's not to say we don't want more budget when it's necessary, but our principal thing is not going to be to say more budget for EDD is always the answer. And I'll just give a second example. Infrastructure. We're spending an enormous amount of money on infrastructure. It's about getting those projects moving and working faster, and in fact, sometimes even spending less. Not spending more, but spending less in some cases. So I think it's the same way that I would suggest we change. Not to say there won't be budget issues. I think on small business funding, we need to form a partnership with MSP to get even more resources. But we did a study about a year and a half ago of just resources in small business funding, and we found out there's so much duplication across the state that we were able to get a lot more done if we could consolidate it rather than only put more money on the table. That is in addition to obviously asking for some additional money. So I'd like to suggest to the Honourable Members just a change of framework on how we look at that. Honourable Mabasa, the question that you've raised on cooperatives, I agree with you about the enormous potential of cooperatives, not just in small enterprises, but also in large ones. And I'm going to offer the examples of South African history and examples of international development. On South African history, a company like BKB does wool sorting and export. And sitting under BKB are a large number of wool farmers. And this cooperative has put together a range of services that can now, or that has been used for many, many years, to make sheep farming economically viable. KWB started off as a cooperative in which vineyard owners and winemakers collaborated in creating bulk capacity, sellers and marketing, bottling plants and so on. Even in the milk production area, one of the big milk companies today started off as a cooperative. So I think we don't see cooperatives always small community basing in one village. Sometimes they are that, but very often they can be larger. So one of the areas is to focus, when we said we want to focus more jobs, is to unlock that potential. Today in India, there's a lot more cooperatives than on a per capita basis in South Africa. It absorbs many more people. But even in places like Spain and Italy, in the advanced sectors of the economy, in the export sectors, you've got large cooperatives, often in quite sophisticated, technology-rich areas. There's a co-op in Spain called Mondragon, in the Basque area. It is top class. It is high tech. It's not a local community based thing. It's a massive corporation run on cooperative principles. So thank you. I think you keep on reminding us of an important area of cooperative development. Our point on co-ops is to move from advocacy to implementation. And the difficulty for the state is the cooperative has to operate on the international Cooperative Alliance Principles, the ICA Alliance. It says independence. State can't form a co-op. The minute you form a co-op and you control a co-op, it's not a co-op. So we can support cooperatives. We can provide incentives for cooperatives, off-take agreements and so on, but it's an independent group of producers. And that's where I think we want to take the thing in this administration to practical implementation. Is that, I think,
Governor, someone still there?
Honourable Atkinson, you raise an important question, which I think illustrates what we mean by implementing the job structure. I'm going to use that as a platform just to, to elaborate a little bit on the introductory comments. Essentially what you say is there's fundamental change globally in the mining industry. There are challenges in the South African mining industry. How do we respond? What do we do? How do we avoid simply being the managers of consequences, and we need to have a strategy in place to drive process. So the first thing that we do is we say that there are new deposits in mining that are potentially able to fundamentally change the extent of output in South Africa. Manganese, for example, we've got 80% of the world's no manganese reserves. They're locked up largely in the Northern Cape. Infrastructure is poor, so you can't get there going. So what you need to do is have an infrastructure program. I went to the quaint and very wonderfully named town of Hot as Hell in the Northern Cape, where the mineral resources are, a significant part of it is grounded there. And we worked with the mining industry there on rail lines, on new power supply to the mines. We switched on power plants and so on to open a center plant that takes the ore and transforms the first stage of transformation. We now see that going into a big shelter, probably located in Kuka in the Eastern Cape. And in that way, you can begin to unlock your manganese mining. So instead of only concentrating on the minerals that historically we provided infrastructure to, we're now looking a little bit further. Second thing, we look at beneficiation. Iron ore. Fission in the Northern Cape, again, is a major deposit of iron ore. Some of that iron ore goes to the Bell Park, into a AMSA plant, ArcelorMittal plant. Others go to a plant in Saldanha, but too large a quantity go to Saldanha and get loaded onto ships, and they export it in the whole form. So there the challenge now is to come up with a tactical beneficiation plan that uses more of the iron ore locally. And there's been a lot of work in government, and some of it involved legislation, and in a more detailed briefing we can take through that, but instead of only getting skills in digging things out of the ground, we must now also get jobs and skills in transforming things. So that requires partnerships with universities and FET colleges. There's a new university that will be set up in the Northern Cape. So we're discussing with Minister Nzimande whether that university should not have one of its focus areas, the development of skills in mineral extraction and beneficiation, given how important minerals are to the future of the Northern Cape. The third area, for example, is many of the mine workers come from areas where there's no jobs. One big catchment area of platinum mining is the eastern part of the Eastern Cape, the Kwandalan area. And it's an area that has historically been neglected. It was the major labor tending area under apartheid. And what we now are working on is a program to revitalize and create economic activity in that area. So the President announced that we're going to be building a new dam, the Mvubu Dam, that will provide water for irrigation so that we can get subsistence farming into commercial farming. We have small holders who can now produce at a cost where that product can be sold on external markets, not just consumed in the community, so that you have an income stream coming in. But now, you've got the water, what about transport? So we're looking at rerouting the N2 Wat Coast Highway from East London by through to Etiquette, which will reduce the travel time by 2 hours, make it easier to get product to market quickly, and ensure that rural communities are connected better with each other. Third, we're revamping South itself as the commercial hub of the area. We've spruced up the airport, runway that's now able to take larger planes, working on the terminal building and so on. There are new bridges being built, the Nelson Mandela Bridge, the Qatar Bridge, that connects. There's more work done on health facilities and so on. Now, why am I going through all the detail? It's to make a simple point. If you want to look at how to create sustainable economic activity in that labor sending area, so that when you have reduction in employment in mining, people can go to productive employment or entrepreneurial opportunities in their own area. The fourth one is really the new social contract in the mining industry, a way in which there's a cooperation between business and labor has gone through an incredibly difficult period. But it's raised the issue that the terms under which the mining industry operates, workers are in skills, their housing conditions for workers in areas like Rustenburg and elsewhere in the country, all of those must be addressed. And it's in a combination of those different things that we respond to these international changes in mining. And I've given four concrete examples that we're working on at the moment. On the Botany, the question that you've raised, what is to be done differently in the second phase of the transition, on, for example, localization. And there, I think we've got some examples that we want to build on and scale up much more. We did a program on public transport that started in Joburg and Rio Maria, and Cape Town is my city. Is now being expanded to many more networks across the country. A year and a half ago, 2 years ago, all of the buses used on that program were imported from Brazil. All of the buses were imported from Brazil. So we're working, we worked on the localization plan. We used the existing provisions of the PPFA. We designated bus assembly as a local activity. And we now have a bus manufacturing capability here in the Western Cape. We have one in Gauteng, and we're negotiating for a second one in Gauteng, so that we, in fact, bring localization to South Africa. So we've got a big program to expand rail transport. There's one company that does the refurbishing of rail carriages, the Black-owned company, and they've been supported in a contract that allows the development of technical skills in carriage refurbishing, and as new trains come off the production line, which is a different program, the constant maintenance and refurbishing can then be done locally here in South Africa. In Kusile, we funded through the IDC a major manufacturing capability to build these condenser units for the big power station. Even though it is a massive power station, a global standard, more and more of the product we want to have localized. So I think it's doing more of that, doing it on scale, and in the first 5 years we were trying to find out what works best. Now we want to use that lessons to scale up what works best. Honorable Charles, I really would like to make the point that the election campaign has ended. The people have spoken. The Green Party did get 62%. Your party did not get 30%. We can either have 5 years of the election campaign in the committee, or we can use the committee to forge a cross-party consensus on what needs to be done. I think I would want to be very clear that as cabinet we have a very concrete vision of how to ensure that we get inclusive growth and job creation. But by its nature, economy is a part of the national policy space that is influenced not just by government. South Africa is very dependent on global development, so part of what we need to do is to constantly adjust. You know, I give a statistic very often to people that surprise me. If you look at the big countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, South Africa's exports to GDP ratio, or to put it even more precisely, our trade to GDP ratio, is roughly the same as China. It's significantly greater than India, Russia, and Brazil. In other words, a much greater part of the economic value add in South Africa comes from what happens in the global economy. And so when we look at how best to deal with the impact on the real economy, we look at international developments, and your colleague, Honorable Atkinson, asked what I thought was a quite constructive question, and we deal with it using this, the National Development Plan as our framework, as our vision of setting out what we want to achieve, the kind of society we want to be by 2030. Trying to fish for division is not only inaccurate and unhelpful, but harks back to an event that was called the general election that's now over. Could you ask the Honourable Member perhaps, when he comes in to visit the committee in future, to bear that in mind? But coming to the question of guidelines in a court that has more teeth, it's not the case that we always need to see things as having teeth. I want to give an example of the Mzumbubu project, which will also go to Honourable Mbada's question. Honourable Mbada asked the question of how do we ensure that we have support for defence communities? The Mzumbubu water project, the dam and the irrigation system, has been planned and discussed since 1962. It took us in the past administration to have a very practical approach to it. You look at the agencies that are involved, the departments, the funding challenges, the geological issues, the community issues about where the dam would be sited, the design issues, how much of it would be hydro, how much would be the water itself, because we can generate both energy and water from the project, and we put that together. We found a lot of support across government. The Eastern Cape Province was a great partner in this. The municipalities affected are working with us on it. So I think that very often we have enormous problems at the municipal level or at provincial level or at national government level. But there are also many instances that things do work, but what's lacking is coordination. And that's what we've brought to play in a case like this. So what the Mzumbubu Water Project will do under Bombata is bring economic development opportunities to depressed communities. To say that our water strategy can't only be an urban strategy, and it certainly can't only be one that is geared towards industry. Important as that is. In, for example, the Dawood Dam in Limpopo, we are ensuring that water reaches mining companies because that can create jobs there. But in the Eastern Cape, it is geared very much to empowering local communities. Now, as we then learn the lessons from the Dawood design, we see we can get water in Limpopo, not only to mining companies, but also to local communities. So I think as each of our projects unfold, we have a mandate to ensure that development goes to the poorest in our society, that young people are empowered, that rural communities are empowered. Our job is to make sure that we take that vision and turn it into practical implementation. In the PICC, something called SIP number 6 focus on the 23 poorest district municipalities. How to get development there, how to get water, sanitation, health facilities, basic transport systems in place there. And we track that. In some cases, the capacity is very low. We've got to rebuild basic capacity and capability. We're working now with one quite large town where the technical capability is so poor that the water crisis has arisen, and we're helping them to fix that. So I think I wanted to make those points, Chairperson, because we don't want to measure our impact only by rate of growth. Growth in GDP is important because it generates the resources to finance many other things, and growth itself can often be a stimulus to more job creation. But it's the kind of growth we're looking at. Growth that absorbs people in productive employment, growth that gives opportunities for entrepreneurs that are young, that are female, that are rurally based, that are black of Africans. Those go to the issues of the quality of growth. And that's what we think the annual performance plan will seek to do. I recognize the caution that's come from some of the honorable members that this is a tough program that's beginning up, that we have 9 months left to achieve it. But I said to the department, I want to set such targets. Yes, it may well be that someone can make a bit of a meal of it in the media and be a bit of embarrassment if you don't reach every single target. But better to set stretch targets that will ensure that we deliver to our people. And we set easy targets and achieve nothing at the end of 9 months. We can tick all the boxes, but it has no impact. And the impact ultimately, as one of the honorable members said, is on things like jobs, and inclusive growth. We were pleased that last year, in the financial year, we had just short about 500,000 new jobs created. It is the largest new job creation measured by Stats SA in a long time. And that for us begins to show the potential of the economy. And these measures in the APP are the instruments that we use to be able to get to the outcomes that we want, which is jobs, development, inclusive growth, and transformation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. I get to call you for everything on the implementation of this. And I think above that, we want also to report on the impact of our cost, especially the localization cost, that would guide us as to whether are we making progress or we're not making progress in that regard. But I think further members must be patient, because we still have to have full sessions where we're going to be talking about each and every topic that you've mentioned. We know that, Minister, we still have to trust business in distress today, and we know that the funding is not exhausted here. We still need to focus around that information. We're not going to meet with the IDC. So that will arise also, but we need also further information to the new approach in helping our medium and large businesses in the country. Let's leave it there. But Minister, thank you very much. I think for, unless there are follow-ups, we still have, I think, 10 minutes or so. For any follow-up questions that you have, not always that we have a minute, but I think let's use the opportunity. Go one, twice, or
the person I've got a comment in everything that the minister has said, and thank you again. Let me also reiterate the fact that it was very informative presentation, and for us people who are coming from, who are new in the committee, we've gained a lot out of your presentation, and I think what the chairperson has said, that must listen then to questions. That's what we are trying to do. We're trying to observe the movement and see where the department is taking us to. But Minister, I would like to press on the issue of monitoring every project and every money that you have dispatched out to this department or to the district or wherever. The issue is not about, maybe the implementation is there, but to that implementation of the program, there needs to be a monitoring system that is attached to that program. People we don't have skills in South Africa. Few of us are skilled in South Africa in some of the other things. That makes us to lack in the issue of implementation, and therefore the people who've got skills or people who know how to implement a certain project and what needs to be done, needs to monitor it very closely. Because I think we've got, we lack in that. Oh, by the way, my name is Victor Rancho from Eastern Cape Center.
Thank you, Rancho. That's it, Leanne.
Not introduced myself previously. My name is Christian Leanne from Hawthorne. I apologize for that. Thank you, Chairperson. What we want to say at this stage, Chairperson, is that we had an opportunity to look at the APP last night. we desired more time, you know, to really interrogate the documents. But from what we were able to go into, it is clear that this is a fundamentally well-structured document. In fact, it's a paradigm shift from what we are used to. What is going to be important, obviously, it is that all of us, as the members of this committee, must realize the responsibility that we have. That responsibility is to interrogate the document as it stands and interact with the minister on an ongoing basis through the committee, of course, to ensure that the plans are implemented, to have all those mechanisms to monitor, to ensure that you know, the ideas that are here are implemented in the various spheres of government, in the various sectors of implementation, so that the idea of a better life for all our people becomes realized. So, as members of this committee, we are going to work effectively, we are a family. Yes, maybe coming from different political parties, and that is fine, that is democracy. But once we are here in Parliament, we are a family. Our task is to make sure that we improve the lives of our people. We thank the minister for a very progressive plan.
Thank you. Thank you, I guess all of us here understand how we need it. We all here for the people out there and the other constituencies. Thank you very much for the work. This then takes us to the conclusion of the first part of our program or agenda. Let me, Minister, Deputy Minister, on behalf of the really appreciate and thank you for firstly your availability for this meeting, secondly for the well-prepared presentation that you have given us. And I know you have given me more time, you just gone on and gone on until we are all, you know, here of what the mandate is all about. We are looking forward to interact further on other issues related to, we know that the growth challenge that is there, and the president gave us in 5%, I think that amount of tax for you and the colleagues within the economic cluster. I think also the unemployment because of that, I think the train testing for the NCC, I think it's another task. Inequality level, to reduce that, I think it's another task. And these are the main focal areas of this team. And we hope that together with your colleagues within the cluster, we will be able to implement and see to the fact that we don't feel our people on those areas. Thank you very much. We have confidence in you that you will ensure that the targets are set by yourself will be met. All that you'll be doing is to push you. Push you further and further. I think if you know that how we push, we will be pushing once more until we are satisfied that we're on the right track. For now, we can all wish you all the best together with the Deputy Minister. You've been in this for a long time, you might have been in another field, but this is the sense of continuation of what you've done. I think it's for a good team, maybe of that. We will be agreeing the fact that we know where you come from and make sure that we push you together to keep that result. All the members here are members of Parliament, they represent different stakeholders, constituents. And all of us that we are here want to see our community to the best. Irrespective of where we come from, I don't do what I said there. We are all interested in seeing development in this country. And we're all going to be here. We might be seeing from different truths, but where we're heading to is the best. So, where some of us in Alto instead of Tena, to ensure that we bring the out of if that brings harmony, we'll make sure that everybody can be out for that. So, but I don't think we should have that one. Thank you very much and all the questions. Thank you. Remember, we'll have a short break before we thought we should just get two physical lessons done in terms of focusing on the product, about the product on its own, how are we going to go out now, and the content advisor can give us two ways around the customer analysis in relation to the budget process. That will then be that you don't worry, the similar lunch prepared, but if you choose one to proper lunch, you can still go to level 2 to get it. But it's just 5 to give you lunch between 1 and 2. And after that lunch, you will then get the presentation from the competition authority. We'll start with the competition portion and then we'll come to later on to the competition portion. We still have a long day and I hope all of you will be here. Thank you very much. May we have that 5 minutes of tea break? And
Daniel, PNG now. For the meeting, what has been?
Group. Okay, alright, yeah. It's interesting to see where they actually grasp the fact that there's going to be some in mining over the next 5 or 10 years. So, can see if they should do something about it as well. But,
not at all. Good question.
Yeah.
So I have to go to Thank you.
family is also doing.
Yeah, they are also doing album.
You want to sing to me? Come here.
No,
I don't got to listen. What do you need it for? What do you need it for? Oh, okay. Is it? I don't have money with me.
Well, we need any kind of, but we need to go.
I'm 나중에 아침에 걸린다고 하면 나중에 고동만 엄맥제 들켰으면 분명히 있는 날 그런 거지.
근데 난 我想过他们那么不然你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你看你